But if he wanted to dispose of a body, Vic could have dumped her in the lake and gone home. No one would have known. There would have been no need to complicate the situation by using his own car. Unless Vic also wanted out of his marriage and the stressful situation. In that case, it made perfect sense. Shit. Should he share the theory with Lance? Not yet. He'd keep it in the back of his mind and see where the evidence led. Sharp cruised to a stop at the sign and turned right. Crystal Fox lived in Gray's Hollow, a mostly rural community just north of Scarlet Falls. Weeds and woods lined both sides of the country road. At 6 o'clock in the evening, the sun had set, but the night wasn't yet full dark. In the gray twilight, Sharp passed a run-down farmhouse with a sagging porch and a barnyard full of knee-high weeds. A quarter mile later, he turned at a broken mailbox onto a narrow, rutted driveway. Trees arched overhead and shadowed the lane. Ahead, taillights glowed in the dim, and Sharp spotted Lance's Jeep. Morgan and Lance were already there. As soon as Sharp pulled in next to the Jeep, they climbed out and waited for him on the driveway. The small one-story house was muddy brown and miserable-looking. Paint peeled from the front door. Shutters and roof shingles were missing. A lamppost halfway between the driveway and the house stood dark. The porch light wasn't on either, and the lawn, more meadow than grass, hadn't seen a mower since the 1970s.
"The place feels empty,"
Sharp said on his way up what had once been a brick path. A whimper caught his attention.
"Did you hear that?"
Morgan was already on it, moving toward an overgrown shrub under a dirty bay window. Flashlight in hand, Lance hurried to get in front of her. Looking out for her took some effort on his part. That girl took care of her own business. Putting an arm in front of Morgan to stop her, Lance crouched, separated the foliage, and shone his flashlight into the shrubs. Morgan stood back, arms crossed over her chest, one flat shoe tapping the ground.
"I see something."
Lance pushed his big shoulders into the bushes. Dried leaves crackled as something moved.
"Ow! It's a dog and it just bit me."
Morgan tugged him back. "Let me try."
"Be careful."
Lance shook his hand, blood welled from his finger. Sharp leaned over to get a look at the wound.
"Practically a paper cut. You'll live."
Morgan pulled a tiny packet of tissues from her bag and handed it over. Then she hiked up her skirt, got down on her knees, and crawled into the shrubs, talking in a soothing baby voice. "It's okay. I won't hurt you."
"That's a good baby."
A few seconds later, she backed out of the shrub with a small dog in her arms. A ridiculously tiny brown creature. A pink bow held the hair out of its eyes. Sharp snickered.
"It must weigh all of 4 pounds. Still has sharp teeth."
Lance wrapped a tissue around his bleeding finger. "It's a Yorkie," Morgan said. Sharp let the little dog sniff his hand. It growled as he read her tag.
"Her name is Sweet Pea Fox. She must be Crystal's dog."
Morgan set it on the ground. It took one step, dragging one leg, and she scooped it back up again. "She's hurt."
"Let's see why Crystal's dog is outside."
Sharp headed up the walk. There was no doorbell, so he knocked on the door. Something scraped from the back of the house. Lance put a finger to his lips and took off in a jog around the corner. Sharp motioned for Morgan to stay put, then he headed around the opposite side. A rickety chain-link fence defined the backyard. Sharp went through the open gate. He heard the scraping sound again. Shoving aside the branch of a monstrous rhododendron, he saw a hooded figure drop out of a window and haul ass through the weeds. Sharp sprinted after him. He could still clock a 6-minute mile and close the distance between them rapidly. Reaching the fence, the figure put one hand on top and leaped over. His feet hit the weeds on the other side and he turned on the speed. Sharp followed him over the fence and continued to gain ground. He heard Lance's heavier steps and the rattle of the fence behind him, but Sharp focused on the hooded figure. He was tall and slim, but clearly unconditioned. His strides were slowing. As the man reached the end of the meadow at the edge of the woods, Sharp lunged forward, grabbing him by his hoodie and yanking him backward. Momentum worked with him. The man's feet continued forward, his shoulders pitched backward, and he landed on his back on the grass.
Don't move.
Sharp put a foot on his throat, intending to pin him to the ground. The man grabbed his foot, knocked Sharp backward, and scrambled to his feet. Sharp got a boot under his body and launched himself forward. He landed on top. He was in good shape for his age, but the man under him was younger and stronger. A wild fist caught Sharp on the jaw. Stars exploded in front of him. In 2 seconds, he found himself on his back with a weight on his chest and hands around his throat. The kid leaned on his hands, cutting off Sharp's air. Sharp crossed his arms over his chest, using his elbows to bend his assailant's arms and eased some of the pressure, just enough to suck in one breath. As suddenly as the weight had landed on his chest, it disappeared. Sharp gulped oxygen, his lungs burning as a shadow fell over him. Lance had the kid by the neck of his hoodie, the kid's toes barely on the ground.
What's going on?
Lance asked. He wasn't even out of breath. Sharp looked up, wheezing and feeling old. Lance shook the kid like a kitten.
Why were you running from Crystal's house?
The guy was young, maybe 18 or 19. His wide open, panicked eyes made him look younger.
I didn't do anything.
His arms flailed. Lance eased the kid's feet to the ground and released him. Sharp sat up and waited for the kid to spill his guts, but he clamped his mouth firmly shut. Sharp bet this was not the kid's first B&E.
If you try to run.
Sharp jerked a thumb toward Lance, whose bowling ball-sized biceps served as useful threats.
I'll sick him on you again.
The kid's gaze darted back and forth between Sharp and Lance. Then he nodded. Sharp checked the kid's pockets for weapons and found a wallet. He read the driver's license.
Ricky Jackson. Okay, Ricky, let's go see what you were so anxious to run away from.
Sharp pushed him back toward Crystal's house. He pocketed the wallet just in case the kid managed to beat feet. There were no houses in sight. The dilapidated farmhouse a quarter mile away was the closest neighbor. Ricky dragged his feet, but he was smart, or experienced, enough not to give anything away.
Are you cops?
He protested.
No,
Sharp said, keeping one hand on the kid's arm. The kid tried to twist away.
Then get your hands off me. Walk.
Lance pointed toward Crystal's place. As they approached, Sharp studied the open window. Sharp caught a vibe and a smell that indicated bad shit had gone down.
I'm sure they'd love to know why you were climbing out Ms. Fox's window.
The kid went quiet. They hauled him around front. What happened? Morgan asked.
Caught him climbing out a window.
Sharp handed the kid off to Lance, then went to his car for a set of zip ties. Returning, he pulled Ricky's hands behind his back and fastened his wrists together.
Hey, you can't do that.
The kid wriggled.
Shut up.
Sharp dragged Ricky to a lamppost and used a second zip tie to hook him to the post. He patted him on the shoulder.
You stay here. You suck, man. I'm gonna sue your ass.
The kid spat onto the ground.
I caught you breaking into a woman's home. This is a citizen's arrest, my young friend.
Sharp glanced at Morgan. Her face was set in a disapproving frown. He ignored her. His instincts told him they were not going to like what they found inside the house, and that the kid had been up to no good. Besides, Gray's Hollow was Sheriff King's domain. The sheriff might not love PIs, but he would enthusiastically approve of heavy-handedness when it came to punk-ass kids breaking into houses.
Keep an eye on him,
he said to Morgan, then motioned Lance forward. They approached the front door. Sharp pulled gloves from his pocket and tugged them on. Lance did the same. Sharp tried the knob, but the door was locked. He and Lance walked the perimeter of the house, looking in windows. They tried the side entrance and a sliding glass door around back before stopping in front of the open window. The sill was chest high. Sharp peered into a spare bedroom. He scanned past the boxes and piles of clothing to focus on the doorway. Across the hall and through another doorway, a pair of feet dangled just off the floor.
Shit. I see dangling feet.
Lance laced his fingers as a step. Sharp took the leg up and scrambled inside. He maneuvered his way through the piles of junk. Lance came through the window behind him.
Let me go first.
Lance shouldered ahead, his gun in his hand.
I'm armed.
But Sharp could already see there was no reason to hurry. The woman was beyond help. He stopped in the doorway, the breath whooshing out of him as he viewed the body. The smell of death brought back his years on the police force. The body had not yet begun to decompose, but the bowels and bladder had released. She dangled from a rope attached to the ceiling fan, her toes not quite brushing the carpet. Her eyes bulged and her swollen tongue protruded from her mouth. A chair rested on its back beside her.
I'll clear the house,
Lance said. Sharp heard him moving through the rooms. Crystal Fox had been the single best new clue in Vic's disappearance. And she was dead.
You really need to carry your gun.
Lance stopped next to him.
I generally don't need one, and I want people to feel comfortable talking to me,
Sharp said.
Besides, you're the muscle. I'm the brains in this operation.
Lance holstered his weapon and pulled out his phone.
I'll call the sheriff. No rush. She isn't going to be more dead 5 minutes from now.
Sharp took a camera from his pocket and began snapping pictures.
Once King gets here, the scene will be off limits, and the ME won't talk to us about an active investigation either. The sheriff will button down all of the hatches as usual.
But the kid knows we're here,
Lance argued, sliding his phone out of his pocket.
True. And I always get the feeling the sheriff would like nothing better than to toss us both in jail. Also true. King likes jailing people in general, but he has Ricky to lock up tonight. That should make the sheriff happy.
While Lance made the phone call, Sharp snapped more pictures, zooming in on the rope, the knot, the woman's face.
It's a simple slip knot. No special skill required.
Do you think this isn't suicide?
Lance asked, lowering his phone.
The sheriff recently informed her that her daughter was murdered. Seems like a reasonable motivation.
Maybe.
Sharp photographed the body in sections.
But her daughter has been missing for 23 years. Don't you think the possibility that Mary had been killed would have occurred to her by now? But the reality is very different from the possibility.
Lance said quietly.
Damn. What a shitty thing to say to someone whose father had also been missing all that time.
Sharp lowered the camera.
I'm sorry. You would know better than I would.
He could be right.
Lance rolled a shoulder.
Even my mom, with all her problems, was almost relieved when she thought my father's body had been found. She's more upset now, knowing that it wasn't him. We'll get to the bottom of this.
Sharp pointed to purplish-red dots on the dead woman's swollen face.
Facial congestion and petechial hemorrhages are consistent with death by asphyxia caused by hanging, manual strangulation, or smothering.
He used one gloved finger to lift the hem of her pant leg and expose her foot and calf.
No sign of lividity yet.
The blood hadn't had time to settle in the lowest part of the body.
She hasn't been hanging here very long.
Sharp finished with the body and moved onto the room. His gaze landed on the dresser. The drawers were open and had been rifled through. A jewelry box lay on its side, its contents spilled onto the top of the dresser.
That little rat was robbing her.
What's going on in there? Morgan called from the open window.
Don't let her in here.
Lance frowned at the body.
She doesn't need to see this.
She's tough.
Sharp said.
She can handle it.
But she doesn't have to.
Lance said in a low voice, then he turned and called back to her.
Wait out front. Crystal's dead. I called the sheriff. He's going to be mad enough that we contaminated his scene.
Sharp gave him a look.
She is more durable than you think.
Yet the fact that Lance was always trying to protect her was a good sign. For the last 10 years, Sharp had been wondering if the young man would ever let himself have a personal life. But Morgan was the kind of special that had little to do with her pretty blue eyes, and was all about her compassion, smarts, and pure grit.
If we'd gotten here earlier,
Regret slammed into Sharp. A woman was dead and his first big lead gone before he'd gotten a chance to talk to her. Staring at the body, Lance's face tightened. If Sharp was disappointed, he couldn't imagine how Lance felt.
We'd better go outside and pretend we left the scene the second we saw the body.
Sharp backed out of the bedroom.
But on the way out, look for signs of a break-in.
They left the way they came in, doing their best not to touch the windowsill. Sharp examined the window lock and snapped a few pictures.
The lock is broken. The way it's rusted, it's probably been that way for a long time. If she didn't commit suicide, do you think Ricky killed her?
Lance asked.
Hanging a person takes a lot of work,
Sharp said.
Ricky doesn't seem like the industrious type.
They rounded the house and returned to the driveway.
She was dead when I got there,
Ricky shouted the moment they were in sight. Ignoring him, Sharp handed Morgan the camera.
Put this in your pocket.
Why? She asked.
Because the sheriff won't search you,
Sharp said. Nodding, Lance gestured between his own chest and Sharp's.
We don't intimidate him.
A few minutes later, the sheriff's vehicle slid to the curb. Two deputies parked behind him. King climbed out of his vehicle and stomped up the driveway. His face was locked in a stony expression.
What happened? We came to talk to her and knocked on the door. No one answered, but we saw this guy.
Sharp jerked a thumb at Ricky, still zip-tied to the lamppost.
Climbing out a window. I didn't kill her,
Ricky yelled. Sharp gave the sheriff a very abbreviated version of events.
Lance and I cleared the house, verified that she was dead, and called you.
Sheriff King propped one hand on his hip and stabbed a finger at Sharp.
You should have called me and stayed the hell out of the house. What if she was still alive?
Sharp asked, though they all knew the chances of someone being alive when hanging by the neck were slim to none. The sheriff glared.
Wait here.
He led his deputies to the front door. He checked the knob, then led the way around the house. 10 minutes later, he returned to the driveway.
Nobody leaves until I give them permission. And I want all three of you in my office at 8 a.m.
Morgan shook her head. I can't be there until 9:30. I have to take my daughter to preschool and drop my nanny at dialysis. The sheriff's jaw worked as if he were chewing nails.
9:30 then.
He stomped to his vehicle, leaned in, and grabbed his radio mic.
He's pissed,
Lance said.
Hey, we didn't kill her.
Sharp shrugged.
But it's probably a good thing we have our lawyer with us.
Who didn't see you break any laws. Still cradling the injured little dog in her arms, Morgan stroked its head.
Exactly.
Normally, Sharp was all about following the rules. But this case was different. This one was personal. He would do whatever it took to learn what had happened to Vic Krueger, and he thought Crystal Fox's suicide was just too convenient. Chapter 17. 2 hours later, Morgan was relieved that neither Sharp nor Lance were in jail, though she wasn't ruling out that possibility for the near future. In her office, she made a cup of coffee. While the machine gurgled, she dug through her desk for a candy bar. Sharp walked into her office, a grayish-green shake in his hands. His hair was damp. He'd gone upstairs to his apartment over the office for a 5-minute shower and change of clothes.
Are you sure I can't make you one?
Sharp took a huge gulp.
When was the last time you ate?
Lance and I had sandwiches on the way to Crystal Fox's house. Her coffee machine beeped. She swiveled in her chair to retrieve her steaming mug of energy. One liquid meal a day is my limit.
That stuff will kill you.
Sharp shook his head.
You need to eat better, sleep more, and stop relying on caffeine to get you through the day.
But the hot coffee smelled and tasted like heaven. Spoken like a person who doesn't have 3 kids under the age of 7. Morgan drank, grateful to the first human who'd decided to crush and boil coffee beans. Sharp checked his phone. Any word from the vet? Morgan asked.
Not yet.
Sharp had dropped the little dog at a 24-hour veterinary clinic.
You can go home to your kids.
I called and let them know I'd be late. Again. She hated missing dinner and bedtime with her girls, but her family would take care of the kids and Grandpa. Lance needs me, even if he doesn't want to admit it.
You're right,
Sharp said.
And don't listen to him when he tells you differently.
I won't. The front door opened and closed. Footsteps sounded in the hall. Lance walked through her office doorway. Like Sharp, he'd felt the need to shower after being in close quarters with the body. Lance had stopped at his house 6 blocks away from the office to shower and change his clothes. In Morgan's office, he made himself a cup of coffee.
I can't believe you're gonna drink that.
Sharp's face wrinkled with disgust.
Not now, Sharp.
Lance drank deeply.
It's been a crappy day. I need some sustenance. Go ahead, poison yourself.
Sharp flipped a hand in the air.
Let's get down to business.
Sharp tapped the open lid of his laptop on Morgan's desk.
I'm downloading the photos I took of Crystal Fox's body. We can view them when I'm done. I'm adding Crystal and Mary Fox to the list for background checks. I'll work on those tonight from my mother's house.
Lance said.
We all know the sheriff won't share beans with us.
Sharp said.
What do we know about Crystal Fox?
Morgan began. Crystal Fox was 62 years old. She lived at her current address for the last 30 years. She married Warren Fox in 1983. There's no divorce on record. Sharp made notes on the board.
What do we know about Mary?
She was 21 years old when she died in 1994. She dropped out of high school at the age of 17. She'd been arrested once at 18 for shoplifting and again at 20 for solicitation of prostitution. She pled guilty to both charges, paid a fine for the shoplifting offense, and received probation for soliciting. Morgan scrolled. She worked as a waitress at PJ's and supplemented her income with prostitution.
We need to talk to someone who knew Crystal.
Sharp studied what was now their murder board. There was one house down the road, but it would be best to wait until tomorrow to knock on the door. Morgan said, The sheriff has had quite enough of us tonight. We'll be seeing him again early tomorrow morning. At that time, I'd rather be able to honestly say that we haven't tampered with his case. Sharp glanced at the clock.
After we're done with the sheriff, then.
Lance set down his cup. His face was drawn and dark circles lay like bruises under his eyes. He needed a good meal and a full night's sleep, but he wouldn't allow himself either.
We need to know how Mary was connected to my father. They knew each other from PJ's.
Sharp said.
But you're right, that isn't enough. Your father wasn't at PJ's that night. Both your mother and the responding patrol officer verified that.
We need to know if Mary worked that night. Morgan tapped her pen on her blotter. In the back of her mind, a much darker possibility had formed. If Vic had had a sexual relationship with Mary, could he have killed her?
Putting a visit to PJ's on the list, though I can't imagine anyone on the current staff was working there all those years ago.
Sharp made a note on the board. He checked his laptop.
The pictures are downloaded.
He and Lance shifted their chairs and he angled the computer so they could all see the screen. Morgan flinched at the images.
At first glance, this appears to be a suicide.
Sharp clicked through the pictures of the knot.
The chair had been knocked over, she struggled a little, maybe her feet kicked.
Sharp squinted at the screen.
In the few suicide hangings I've seen, the knot was on the side of the neck, typically rising behind the ear due to the weight of the body in suspension. This one is at the back of the neck. It's atypical, but doesn't necessarily imply anything sinister.
The rope looks like a common nylon type, Morgan said. I have some in my shed. The woman wore sweatpants and a worn sweater. Her feet were bare.
What smeared around her eyes?
Lance straightened. He leaned closer to the computer.
Sharp. We have a close-up. We do.
Sharp tapped the touchpad mouse. It's mascara. She'd been crying. Morgan said in a soft voice. That morning, the sheriff had told her daughter was dead. Let's see the whole room. Sharp switched pictures. She went back to bed after the sheriff left. She drank and she cried. Morgan pointed at a box of tissues on the nightstand next to a glass and a bottle of gin. There wasn't enough alcohol to numb that level of grief. Morgan had lost both of her parents and her husband, but she couldn't fathom the depth of pain that came from losing a child.
The bedding is half on the bed, half off.
Sharp leaned closer to the screen.
But the whole house was a mess, so it's hard to say if there's any sign of a struggle.
Lance said,
if she was drunk, she wouldn't have struggled much anyway.
They reviewed the rest of the photos, but nothing else stood out.
My eyes are crossing.
Sharp stood and stretched his back.
I think we should all go home and get some sleep. Nothing's happening tonight. Tomorrow we'll split up to interview Crystal's neighbors and the staff at PJ's.
Morgan took her coffee mug to the kitchen and put it in the dishwasher. Then she returned to her office to collect her tote. Lance took his keys from his pocket.
I have to go to my mother's house. Sharp, could you follow Morgan home? Of course. Give me 5 minutes.
Sharp walked into the hallway. Morgan followed Lance into his office. He was stashing his laptop into a computer case. What about you? She reached up and cupped his jaw. Buried under all that strength was a soul-deep vein of vulnerability. He covered her hand with his.
I can't even think about me right now.
And she worried about that very fact. Don't shut me out. I'm here for you.
I know. Thank you.
He pulled free of her grasp.
I'll be at your house by 9. We can drop Sophie and Gianna on the way to the sheriff's office.
Good night. She rose onto her toes and kissed him on the lips. Call me anytime, even if you just need to talk.
I will.
He walked out of his office without looking back. But would he? Morgan collected the copy of the file she'd made earlier that day. On the way out of the building, she turned to Sharp. Something occurred to me tonight. Do you think there's any possibility that Vic killed Mary? Sharp sighed.
The same thing had occurred to me. Unfortunately, I don't know. No one even remotely indicated that Vic had a temper or a violent side. In fact, everyone said just the opposite. Vic was a nice guy.
We haven't established any close link between Vic and Mary, other than he frequented PJ's and she worked there. Sharp stopped beside his car.
Let's see what we can find out about Mary's movements on the night of her death and go from there.
But it was a possibility, one that would devastate Lance and his mother if it were true. Sharp followed her back to the house. He waited at the end of the driveway until she'd unlocked the front door, opened it, and waved. Then he drove off. She went into the house and was bombarded with small creatures, some furry, some not. Before she could take off her coat or put down her tote, they set on her. Her evening greeting could be more accurately described as an attack. The dogs tangled around her legs. Ava took Morgan's tote bag and dragged it to a nearby chair. As soon as Morgan's hands were free, Sophie leaped into her arms. Expecting the jump, Morgan caught her. Not wanting her middle daughter to feel slighted, Morgan leaned over and kissed Mia on the head. Why are you all still up? Morgan allowed herself to be pulled into the kitchen. We missed you! Sophie smacked a kiss on Morgan's cheek. All three girls wore their pajamas, and the scent of no more tangles wafted from their still damp heads. Gianna stood in the hallway, a towel tossed over her shoulder. I hope it's okay that they're still awake. They wanted to see you. The young woman was all smiles, and Morgan was happy to see the tired look on her face was the healthy kind, brought on by an active day nannying three little girls. Not the sort that came from poor nutrition. She still needed dialysis 3 times a week, but Gianna had come a long way since she'd moved in with them last summer. It's fine. Morgan set Sophie down and turned to the girls. Have you brushed your teeth? 3 little heads nodded. Then you can each pick out a picture book. Morgan crouched to their level. I'll be in to read to you in 5 minutes. They scurried down the hall to the room they shared. At the doorway, Sophie elbowed Ava out of the way. Morgan went into the den. Her grandfather was in his wheelchair, his casted leg elevated on a pillow. He wore clean pajamas, his thin white hair combed. Mac sat on the couch, the TV remote in his hand.
You need help getting into bed, Art?
Mac set down the remote control and stood.
Hell no.
Grandpa grumbled.
I feel like one of the children. Can't even wash and dress myself.
You'll be rid of that cast soon, Morgan said, then turned to hug her sister's man. Thank you, Mac. Her sister had found a man the polar opposite of Lance. With his shaggy surfer hair and lean body, Mac always looked a little like the wild creatures he studied as a wildlife biologist.
Anytime. Are you sure you're all right here alone?
He asked. Morgan perched on the arm of the couch, the two dogs at her feet. We'll be fine. Snoozer isn't much of a watchdog, but Rocket doesn't miss a thing. And she would be keeping her gun close. As if she heard Morgan's praise, Rocket cocked her head toward the front door.
All right. Call if you have any concerns.
Mac and Stella live just a few minutes away.
I canceled class for the rest of the week. I'll be back in the morning.
Mac taught biology at the local university and used his wilderness experience to aid the local search and rescue team. You didn't have to do that.
No worries. I just assigned a boatload of reading and a research paper instead.
He grinned. Morgan followed him out of the den to the front door. I don't know what I would have done these last 4 weeks without you, Mac.
In 2 weeks, a simple shower won't be such a production.
Mac went outside.
I just took the dogs out 10 minutes ago. They should be good for the night. Lock up, set the alarm. Call us if you need anything.
Morgan turned the deadbolt, set the alarm, and returned to the den. I'm gonna read to the girls.
I can't wait to be useful again,
Grandpa said. Speaking of useful, Morgan opened her tote. She pulled out the file. Sharp asked if you'd go through his case file on Victor Krueger.
Really?
Grandpa sat up straighter. Yes, really. She handed him the file. And if you get through this whole file, Sharp might have some illegal crime scene photos for you to look at. When she emerged from the girls' bedroom 15 minutes later, Grandpa had the file open in his lap. His reading glasses on his nose, and his entire demeanor had changed. Only a Dane perked up when confronted with murder. Chapter 18. Lance parked in front of Morgan's house just as the school bus pulled away from the curb. Ava and Mia waved from the bus windows. Joining Morgan on the sidewalk, he waved back. The bus rumbled away, and he and Morgan turned toward the house. Her breath puffed in the frosty morning air and she rubbed her arms.
You need a coat,
he said. We're always in a rush. The bus comes at the same time every day. You'd think we'd be ready.
At least you're wearing shoes today.
In her black heels, she was only a couple of inches shorter than him. She wore a red suit and her black hair was twisted in one of the no-nonsense updos she favored for legal business. The girls have missed you the last few days.
I meant to get here earlier.
Lance glanced back at the retreating bus. He'd waited until his mother was settled in her office with a website designed to occupy her before he left. Morgan opened the front door. Sophie leaped at Lance. As he caught her, she wrapped her skinny arms around his neck and pouted.
I haven't seen you all week. You promised to take me skating.
I know. I'm sorry.
Guilt speared him like a fork.
My mom has been sick.
Like Grandpa?
She asked.
Yeah, something like that.
Lance hugged her. When he'd first started dating Morgan, the fact that she had three small children had terrified him. Now, catching one in midair felt natural. He'd never thought he'd looked forward to dealing with the sticky chaos, but their smiles and hugs, their acceptance, filled him with gratitude. But how could he possibly be there for Morgan and her three kids and take care of his mother? No matter how hard Mom tried to be independent, one of life's curveballs could wipe out her efforts as fast as a rag across a whiteboard.
Are you driving me to school?
Sophie squirmed away from his chest. He set her on the floor.
Yep.
Yay!
She raced for her bedroom, stopping and giving him a stern look over her shoulder.
But we have to leave now, or I'll be late. I don't want to be late.
Lance lifted both hands.
Hey, I'm ready. Where's your backpack?
She shot into her room. Gianna came out of the kitchen and took her coat from a peg on the wall. A bag over her arm held her dialysis supplies, a warm blanket, a thermos, and the iPad Morgan had given her for her birthday. The young woman was still sick, still dependent on her treatments and still waiting for a kidney, but there was energy in her step and hope in her eyes. Thanks for driving me today, Lance.
It's my pleasure,
Lance said. They went outside. While Morgan locked the door, he loaded Sophie into his Jeep, double-checking the fit of her safety seat and harness. Gianna slid into the back, next to Sophie, and Morgan fastened her seatbelt in the passenger seat. He drove Sophie to preschool. She made Lance walk her in and introduced him to her teacher before allowing him to leave. Next, he dropped Gianna at dialysis, and then they headed for the sheriff's station. Sharp is meeting us there? Morgan asked.
Yeah,
Lance said.
He wanted to check on the dog.
He's such a softie.
Don't let him hear you say that.
Lance drove out to the sheriff's station, located near the county jail and municipal complex. Sharp was already parked in front of the ugly-ass brown brick building that housed the sheriff's station. He climbed out of his car.
Safety in numbers?
Lance joked as they walked toward the door. Sharp snorted.
I wasn't waiting for you. I was waiting for my lawyer.
How's the dog? Morgan fell into step beside Sharp.
She has a broken leg that needs surgery, but she should be fine for you to take home in a day or so.
Me? Morgan laughed. Why do I get the dog?
You're the one who collects strays.
Sharp opened the glass door and stepped aside to let Morgan enter first. They went inside the lobby. At the counter, they were met by the sheriff's watchdog, a 60-something-year-old woman with sensible shoes, a navy blue cardigan, and a laser-like gaze that could cut a man in two.
Hey, Margie.
Sharp leaned on the countertop. Margie rested both hands on her hips.
Lincoln Sharp, I haven't seen you in ages.
Sharp inclined his head beyond the counter.
There's a reason for that.
Margie's headshake said it all.
It isn't personal. He doesn't believe in the whole concept of private investigation. I'd tread extra carefully today if I were you.
Margie dropped her voice.
He just canceled his annual hunting trip because of this case. This'll be the first deer season he'll miss in 15 years. He is not in a good mood.
Was he ever?
Thanks, Margie.
Sharp said. Margie continued to shake her head as she gestured over her shoulder with a thumb.
Go on back, he's expecting you.
The sheriff greeted them with a nod and a grunt in the corridor. He had showered, shaved, and donned a fresh uniform, but his eyes were weary. He hadn't slept much, if at all. He issued commands to a deputy at his side.
Put Sharp in room one, Kruger in room two, and Miss Dane in my office.
Only Morgan warranted a title. You realize neither Mr. Sharp nor Mr. Kruger will answer any questions outside of my presence, Morgan said without moving. The sheriff muttered something that sounded like,
"Aw, hell,"
under his breath.
I give up with you three. Just go in there.
With a frustrated wave, he motioned toward an open doorway on their left. Lance led the way into a cramped conference room full of stale air and the smell of burned coffee. The sheriff came in behind them. The office chair squealed as he dropped his bulk into it.
No doubt, you've had plenty of time to get your story straight anyway.
Mr. Sharp and Mr. Kruger gave full statements last night, Morgan pointed out. Were there any discrepancies?
No,
the sheriff admitted.
Before we get started, I have news for you.
King nodded at Morgan.
I had a talk with Tyler Green about your stalker problem. He claimed not to know anything about it. But the most interesting takeaway from our conversation was that he has struck a deal with the prosecutor's office.
What deal? Morgan stiffened.
His case was given to Esposito, who offered him reduced charges for time served.
The sheriff's frown deepened.
I impressed upon him the importance of staying far away from you if he wanted to avoid further incarcerations.
but Tyler isn't known for his self-control or intelligence. Please be careful.
Thank you, Morgan said. I appreciate the notice. King nodded, then turned to Lance.
Now, back to the case. Do you remember going to PJ's when you were a boy?
Yes,
Lance said. Sheriff King cocked his head.
Your dad went there a few times a week. Mary Fox worked there. Do you remember her?
No.
Lance shook his head.
I was 10.
All he remembered was that the burgers were huge and he could watch TV while he ate.
Your father's friend remembered Mary. You talked to them yesterday, right? Brian and Natalie Lead and Stan Adams.
The sheriff asked,
how well do you remember them from your childhood?
I have some memories.
Lance shifted his weight. The hard plastic chair dug into his back.
But once my dad went missing, I didn't see any of them.
The sheriff leaned forward.
Do you remember your mother acting strangely back then?
No,
Lance said. His father had hidden that well.
Do you remember your father being depressed?
The sheriff asked.
No,
Lance answered.
Kids don't always know what's really going on with their parents.
The sheriff leaned back and crossed his arms. Discomfort swam around in Lance's chest. Where was the sheriff going with his questions? King turned to Sharp.
Your original reports mentioned that Vic was upset, depressed about his wife's deteriorating mental health.
Sharp nodded.
Mary Fox had a prior arrest for soliciting.
The sheriff scrutinized their faces one at a time.
But I suspect you already knew that.
Discomfort curled Lance's fingers into fists. Next to him, Morgan must have felt his tension building. She pressed her leg against his, a silent plea for him to cool it. Where are you going with these questions, Sheriff? She asked. Sheriff King straightened.
Once we cleared the mud from the vehicle, we found a brick on the floor of the driver's side, as if someone had used it to jam the gas pedal down so the car would drive into the lake all by itself.
Lance's gut twisted. He wanted the sheriff to get to the point, but his mouth would not form words. He felt like King was toying with him, leading him along like a cow being coaxed into the slaughterhouse. They all knew Mary hadn't driven the car into the lake.
Yesterday, the dive team scanned the lake bottom where we found the car. They found no other remains.
The sheriff leaned forward, his elbows hitting the table.
You're sure you haven't heard from your father over the years?
What?
Shock freed Lance's voice.
No.
How about your mother?
King interlaced his fingers.
Are you sure she hasn't heard from him?
Yes.
Lance's spine snapped straight.
I'm giving this to you.
The sheriff pulled a folded paper from his pocket and dropped it on the table.
These are the things I'd like from your mother. Either you get them for me or I'll be forced to go to her.
His big hand settled on top of the page.
I'm doing my best to be considerate of her fragility, but I can't let it undermine the investigation.
Morgan beat Lance to the paper. He kept his eyes on the sheriff while she unfolded and read it. He wants the last 12 months of your mother's email and phone records.
My mother is a victim here.
Anger replaced Lance's unease. The sheriff held up a hand to cut him off.
Here's what I think might have happened. Your dad was depressed and lonely. He turned to Mary for comfort, maybe even paid for it, but she was known for being less than kind. Maybe Mary threatened to kill your mother. Maybe Vic strangled her, put her in his trunk, and sent his car into Gray Lake. Maybe that's why your father left town, never to be seen again. And if Vic is alive, I also have to wonder if he's contacted your mother over the years.
Lance surged to his feet. Morgan had him by the arm on one side, Sharp on the other. Morgan was whispering in his ear. Her tone was calming, but Lance couldn't hear the words over the roar of fury in his head. She shoved her way in front of Lance, blocking him with her body. This interview is over, Sheriff.
My father was a victim.
But Lance's voice was strained. Could the sheriff be right? How much did Lance really remember about his dad? Some of his memories had already proven false.
Will you call your mother about these records, or should I?
The sheriff asked.
I'll do it.
Lance forced the words out of his locked jaws. The sheriff's posture eased and his tired eyes gleamed with satisfaction. He didn't retreat from his position or his statement.
I think your father skipped town because he committed murder. Now I need to know if your mother was an accomplice.
Lance wasn't sure how he left the sheriff's station. Suddenly, he was outside. The sun broke through the clouds, blinding him. Morgan took his arm and led him across the parking lot. Your mother doesn't have to comply with the sheriff's request. He doesn't have a search warrant, nor does he have the grounds to get one.
She'll give him whatever he wants, and he knows it.
Lance put both his hands on his head.
He'll tell her not providing the information will slow his investigation, but giving him access to her personal records will upset her.
His mother wanted nothing more than to find the truth. She'd been waiting more than 2 decades to move on with her life. You can go for a power of attorney and block him from seeing her, Morgan said. Lance shook his head.
I'd have to convince her psychiatrist that Mom is incompetent at the same time that she's been making improvement with her new therapist. It won't fly. And she would feel that I betrayed her.
And that would hurt her more in the long run than anything the sheriff could do. Then let her comply. Morgan stopped next to his vehicle. He won't find anything, he's just spinning his wheels. Lance swallowed a lump of anger the size of a volleyball in his throat. If Morgan hadn't dragged him out of King's office, he might have taken a swing at the sheriff and ended up spending the night in jail. Losing control would help no one. But was he losing his shit because the sheriff's theory was way off base? Or because it was all too logical? Sharp came out of the building and crossed the parking lot.
The sheriff is a dick. You want to get even with the SOB? Let's find out what happened to your dad before he does. King will never get over it.
Lance breathed. Angry air hissed out of his chest.
As much as I don't want to, I can follow the evidence to the sheriff's theory that my father killed Mary. In fact, if I wasn't too close to the case, I would have already considered it. But to suggest my mother conspired with him is too much. Your mother did nothing wrong, and she will be fine,
Sharp said.
She'll send him copies of her email and phone records. Hell, she's better than any forensic computer tech I've ever worked with. Even if she had been in contact with your dad, the sheriff would never find the evidence in her permanent records. All communication would have been routed through some village in Turkey.
Lance paced a tight circle in front of his Jeep. His mother was in no danger from Sheriff King, right?
I might not have been right about my parents' relationship when I was 10,
Lance said.
But I know that my mother hasn't been in contact with my dad since that night. Of course she hasn't.
Sharp waved off his comment.
The whole line of inquiry is ridiculous. Unfortunately, it makes me think the sheriff is desperate, and that he doesn't have squat and evidence or leads to follow. Did the background checks reveal anything useful?
Sharp asked Lance. Lance looped a hand around the back of his neck. The hours he'd spent online the previous night had given him a stiff neck.
Brian and Stan both have multiple mortgages on their homes. Stan is the more leveraged of the two by far.
Brian had a sports car in his garage, Morgan said. Maybe he has other expensive toys. Stan has a big house, a Mercedes, and expensive furnishings. But as a partner in an established accounting firm, I'd think he'd be able to afford those things.
Maybe the firm has problems,
Lance said.
It's worth a deeper dive.
Sharp agreed. Then let's get to work, Morgan said. Lance and I'll go talk to Crystal Fox's neighbor. Sharp nodded.
I'll go to PJ's when it opens this afternoon and see if I can track down anyone who knew Mary. I'll see what I can dig up on Stan Adams's accounting firm as well.
He headed for his car. Morgan held her hand out for Lance's keys. I'll drive. You're too angry to get behind the wheel. Lance dropped his keys in her palm. They climbed into the Jeep. Lance called his mother and explained what the sheriff wanted.
He didn't elaborate on the whys of the request.
I'll stop by later and pick up the documents, he told her.
She sounded confused but steady as she agreed. He lowered the phone. Was she upset? Morgan glanced at him.
I don't even know anymore.
He leaned his head against the seat. He could tell Morgan wanted to talk. She was desperate to help, to share his burden and lend him some of her tremendous strength. But Lance was unable to process any more emotion, so he took the cowardly way out. He closed his eyes and didn't say another word until they arrived at the farmhouse down the road from Crystal Fox's house. Morgan parked on the shoulder of the road. Lance lifted his head. The farmhouse sagged under the weight of its history. The structure seemed wobbly and precarious, as if the removal of one cinder block from its foundation would bring the whole building crashing down, like a giant Jenga tower.
Looks like the kind of place where the residents cook meth in a shed.
He scanned the tall weeds that surrounded the property. The carcass of a barn, its timbers exposed like the ribcage of a skeleton, lay behind the house.
Maybe this is a mistake.
A low throb started in Lance's leg. The memory of approaching another rural house with an abandoned air hovered in the periphery of his mind, the way a predator hides in the shadows. He surveyed the windows, looking for movement but saw nothing. No shifting of a curtain, no silhouette of a man. No rifle barrel. No criminal waiting to shoot him in the leg and nearly kill him.
We're just going to ask a few questions, Morgan said.
He rubbed his leg. He'd been shot approaching a front door to ask some simple questions. He shook off the memory of lying on the grass, bleeding out, but his bullet scar continued to ache.
Maybe you should wait in the car.
No one answers the door when you knock. Morgan got out of the vehicle. Lance followed her to stand in front of the Jeep.
Sure they do.
She shook her head.
You don't look casual, you still look like a cop. You intimidate people.
He glanced down at his clothing. Black cargoes, t-shirt, leather jacket.
This is casual.
Sure, for a SWAT team. It wouldn't matter what you wore, you just have that look in your eyes, and your muscles bulge out all over.
Shielding her eyes with one hand, she surveyed the house. Looks abandoned to me, but tax records say the house belongs to Elijah Jackson. He must be related to Ricky Jackson. Which made the meth lab even more likely.
There's only one way to find out.
She walked toward the porch. Lance tamped down his emotional turmoil as he refocused on the house. Ripped screens covered the windows. A gust of wind blew through a set of rusty wind chimes. The high-pitched metallic pings left goosebumps on Lance's arms. He checked his weapon and tucked Morgan behind him as they walked up the driveway and approached the sagging porch.
Watch yourself.
He steered her around a hole in the porch step. Moving away from him, Morgan raised a hand to knock on the door. Lance tugged her to stand behind the doorframe. He whispered in her ear,
"Never stand dead center, in case someone shoots through the door."
Despite the cold air, sweat dripped down the center of his back. His senses went on high alert and his bullet scar itched with the intensity of an electrical current, or an instinct, an early warning system designed for survival. Standing to one side, Morgan knocked on the door. Something moved inside. A thump and a scrape sounded behind the door. Then another. Thump. Scrape. Lance's hand inched toward the weapon on his hip as the door creaked open. Chapter 19. Morgan edged in front of Lance, who looked ready to shoot the homeowner. The door opened 2 inches and hit the end of the chain lock on the other side. The eye that looked through the gap was blue and roomy. Next to her, Lance removed his hand from the butt of his gun. His body didn't exactly relax, but he was no longer poised to rush the door.
Mr. Jackson?
She smiled.
Who are you?
The old man asked. Morgan introduced herself and Lance and offered her business card through the gap above the door handle. The old man took it. A few seconds later, he squinted at Lance.
You look like a policeman.
No, sir, I'm a private investigator,
Lance said.
What do you want?
Mr. Jackson asked.
We just want to ask you a few questions, Morgan explained. The old man grunted. The door closed, metal scraped, and the door opened fully.
I'm Elijah Jackson.
He was at least 75, likely closer to 80, and leaned with both hands on a four-pronged cane. A body that had once been tall and strong, now bowed under a lifetime of hard work and disappointment.
If you're defending Ricky, and you want money, you've come to the wrong place.
Do you know Ricky Jackson? Morgan asked.
He's my grandson.
Mr. Jackson nodded.
The sheriff was here last night.
I'm sorry, Morgan said.
Me too.
Mr. Jackson shuffled backward a few steps and motioned them to enter the house.
I need to sit down. This damp cold is hard on my arthritis.
Morgan and Lance wiped their feet on a rag rug and stepped into a wood-floored foyer. The old farmhouse was falling down, but the inside was tidy. There were none of the dust and fur bunnies that bred in the corners of Morgan's house. Mr. Jackson led the way down a narrow hall to a huge old kitchen. A fire crackled in an adjoining living room. A picture window overlooked a weedy barnyard. Rickety wire fencing encircled a chicken coop. Inside the enclosure, a dozen hens scratched at the dirt. A second fenced and cleared rectangle held neat rows of plants. He gestured toward a scarred oak table. Morgan and Lance sat at ladder-backed chairs while Mr. Jackson filled a tea kettle and set it on the stove.
I'm out of coffee, but I'll still have some tea,
Mr. Jackson said. We already had our breakfast, but thank you anyway. Morgan couldn't take one of this poor old man's last tea bags. She rested her forearms on the tabletop. The gray-brown surface was worn smooth from decades of plates and elbows and scrub rags. In the center of the room, a butcher block island held a basket of brown eggs. Chipped ceramic bowls held carrots, beets, kale, and Brussels sprouts. A large stainless steel pressure canner on the stove and a line of mason jars suggested Mr. Jackson was getting ready to preserve his harvest.
If you're looking for bail money for my grandson, I don't have anything left. He's bled me dry.
Perched on a stool, Mr. Jackson leaned his cane on the island, picked up a vegetable peeler and began scraping the skin from a fat carrot.
I took him in when my son got hooked on drugs and disappeared. I fed the boy, I clothed him, I tried to teach him some sense, but he's just like his daddy. All he can think about is drugs.
He shook his head.
That heroin will be the end of this country. I bailed him out twice. He's taken every dollar I have. If it weren't for my chickens and my garden, I'd starve. Before he left last night, he emptied my wallet. I guess it wasn't enough. Miss Fox wasn't much of a neighbor, but there isn't much lower human can sink than stealing from a dead woman.
Unless it was stealing from his own elderly grandfather. I'm not representing Ricky, Morgan said. Mr. Jackson tossed the naked carrot into an empty bowl and started peeling another.
Then why are you here?
How well did you know Crystal? Morgan asked.
She lived up the road, long as I can remember.
Mr. Jackson shrugged.
We were neighbors, but I wouldn't say we were close. Crystal had her problems.
Do you remember when her daughter disappeared? Morgan asked.
I do. Mary wasn't any better than her mother.
Mr. Jackson attacked the next carrot.
My Gracie, God rest her soul, was one hell of a woman. A lot of people go to church, but my Gracie, she walked the good walk.
Sadness wrinkled his tanned face.
Anyway, I'll remember this one time that Gracie heard Crystal lost her job at the Five and Dime. When Crystal had a teenager to feed, Gracie took her some eggs and a casserole. Crystal told her to mind her own you-know-what business and shut the door in her face.
His wrinkles hardened.
After that, I had no time for Crystal. No one should have treated my Gracie that way. She was only trying to help.
So you haven't seen Crystal lately? Morgan asked.
I've seen her long enough to wave as she drove by. We didn't talk. Grace would be disappointed in me. But polite distance was all I could muster for Crystal.
He paused,